Text amendment lovers, you've come to the right place. Tonight, it is my honor to, what are we doing? We're not adjourning. What's the opposite of adjourning? Commencing my last meeting as chair. As my first act as chair, I will entertain a nomination and election for chair or vice chair. We have a vice chair who will be serving as chair, I believe with the consent of the entire commission, Commissioner Willie. And I would offer the nomination of Jim Carpenter as vice chair in the coming year. And with that, I would entertain a motion in support of...
Just point of order.
Yes.
So, because we only do this once a year, it's a little bit out of practice, but I think you need to receive nominations for the chair and then close the nominations and then vote on the nomination, starting with the chair, and then move to the vice chair.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think the sitting chair conducts both of those motions.
Okay.
Before we turn the...
And with that, I would accept nominations for chairs and a vote. Commissioner Sands.
I move to nominate Commissioner Carpenter as chair. Vice chair.
Okay. I don't want to be chair.
All right. We have a nomination. Any further nominations?
Which
I think we're doing chair first.
We have a nomination for vice chair.
We'll start over.
Hey, this is great TV.
You're going out with a bang, Mr. Chairman.
We had all this time. We should have drawn a diagram or something.
We need to complete nominations and vote on the chair. The
chair first.
And then the vice chair. So
right.
we're starting with the chair.
Thank you. Would you like to submit a second nomination?
I'd like to move to nominate Commissioner Willie as chair for the coming year.
Thank you for the nomination. Are there other nominations for the chair for the coming year?
I'll second that nomination.
All right. Thank you. We have a nomination and a second. Are there further nominations or discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor of Commissioner Willie as chair, please raise your hand. Looks unanimous. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to vice chair nominations. Commissioner Sands, thank you.
I think I've got to practice this time.
Okay.
I'd like to move to nominate Commissioner Carpenter to serve as vice chair for the coming year.
Thank you. We have a nomination. We have a second. A second. Thank you.
Second.
Further discussion or nominations? Seeing none, all those in favor of Commissioner Carpenter as vice chair for the coming year, please raise your hand.
I vote for myself.
Looks unanimous. Thank you all. And with that, I'll hand over the gavel with a little celebratory rap.
Okay. And as my first act as chair, I would like to thank Eric, Commissioner Strzokoff, for his service to his community and for your leadership. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's beautiful. Put that over there, the other stuff.
All right. Usually at this time, we approve our action summary or our minutes from the previous meeting, but we will actually be holding off on our May minutes for till our July meeting. So we will have those at that time. Is that right? Okay. And receive any committee reports. Do we have any commissioners who have reports from committees that have met in the last month? None? Do we have any written communications from the public that were not in our packet?
No, ma'am.
How about written communications from staff, planning commissioners, or other commissioners?
No.
Nothing? Any action of waiver requests or determinations by the city engineer?
No.
This is simple so far.
No.
Any disclosures of ex parte communications? And those would be any discussions we've had regarding items on our agenda that have not been included in our packet so that we can all be on the same page. Any? All right. Declarations of abstentions from specific agenda items. We're on a roll. And any general public comment not related to items on the agenda from either of the two of you? I'm guessing not. Okay. Our item number one is a non-public hearing item, but it is our tradition to treat it as a public hearing item, though I don't see a great deal of possibility for that. So we usually hear a presentation from staff, and then hear from the applicant, and then any member of the public is given 3 minutes to speak on that item.
Good evening, Commissioners. This is an annexation and rezoning request for about 16.8 acres at 1691 East 902 Road. It's shown here highlighted in yellow. The city boundaries are the dashed line. The subject property is just west of the Rock Chalk Park and just east of the South Lawrence Travelway or K-10 Highway. One of the things that happens when land develops within your urban growth area is that they sign agreements to annex, and so the highlighted properties are properties that have agreements to annex. They've consented to annex at such time as the city is interested. We have a platted rural subdivision. Above that, we have a certificate of survey. In 2006, we discontinued platted subdivisions, and instead we used certificates of survey. And then we have two uses to the north, a mini storage and an electrical substation that both have conditional use permits. So those all have agreements not to protest annexation, or they have agreements to annex. In May, there was an annexation and rezoning request before you for property just to the north, the Garber property. Staff recommended, and you forwarded a recommendation to the City Commission for approval for these, with the exception of the parcel shown with the star. And that was because it just wasn't possible to provide sanitary sewer to that property without the use of a pump station or extension of the Baldwin interceptor line. That's not an issue with the subject property. I'll go over that when we look at their utilities infrastructure service plan, but they are able to be served with existing infrastructure. This shows development in the area. Numbers 1 and 2 are the mini storage facility that has a CUP that's under construction or in the early stages of construction. And number 2 is the West Star Electric Substation. It had a CUP approved earlier, and in 2015 another one approved to allow it to expand as necessary to accommodate growth in the area. Item number 3 is up to the northeast. That's a land that's owned by the city, designated as a future city park. Item 4 is a current city park in Rock Chalk Park. 5 is the sports and recreation facilities, Rock Chalk Park, and the sports pavilion at Lawrence. 6 is a development called The Links. It's been in the works for quite a while. The eastern portion is nearly complete. The trees in the middle are being preserved, and they'll be putting apartments along the west side. And that's, we have plans and have been submitted for review on that. Number 7 is a hotel that's being developed. It's nearly complete, right below the Rock Chalk Park. And number 8, we have a plan submitted for a large medical facility by Lawrence Memorial Hospital. That's been preliminary platted, and we have site plans in for review on that. This is the city's annexation policy, somewhat summarized. First, they say you need to submit an application, which has been done. Compensation has to be paid for services to a rural water district, and our city attorney did send letters to the rural water district and also to Westar notifying them of the intent to annex or the request to annex. They do recommend and encourage annexation of properties that are surrounded by city property. This property is not completely surrounded by the city. It's got the city property. It's a triangle. It's got city property on the east side and the K-10 Highway on the west side with the rural property to the north. And the city encourages property owners to annex all of their property that should logically be included in the city borders. The entire parcel is included in the annexation request. Annexation is to be requested, it's required prior to receiving city services, and the property owner would like to develop this property with urban uses and have city services, therefore he has requested annexation. And then the last one just is a part of our policy is that people developing in the urban growth area should sign those consents to annex, and as I showed you, the surrounding properties all have those. So this is from the Infrastructure Utilities Extension Service Plan. It shows street improvements. East 902 Road is being renamed Renaissance Drive to the south. It'll probably be renamed Renaissance Drive up in this area. To the south, it'll be developed to city collector street standards with enclosed stormwater system and also sidewalks on both sides of the street when the medical facility in the northwest corner there develops. From that point to the north of the subject property, it will be the responsibility of the developer to improve East 902 Road also to city collector standards. And the developer has indicated that he may seek a benefit district, which would include his property and the property to the east, which is part of the Rock Chalk Park project. The city parkland is in this area. It's not clear that the city would have funds to participate. I believe they indicated they may not participate in the benefit district, but that would be determined when they actually form one. His other option, the developer could develop, you know, finance the improvements to the road themselves. So you'll see one of the recommended conditions is that that be determined before we publish the annexation ordinance. They could go ahead and work through that once they know that they have approval of the annexation. And once they come up with their means to finance the improvements to the road, then it could be finalized with the publication of the ordinance. Water line improvement will just go in with the improvements to East 902 Road. The city does require a looped system, but there are other water lines in the area that they can extend the mains, and that will be at the cost of the developer. If it's along East 902 Road, that would be the developer, or if there's a benefit district, it would be included in that. Sanitary sewer is much simpler for this project. As you can see, the Baldwin Creek Interceptor is just to the east. They can connect to that. And the utilities department has approved of their plans to extend the utilities. The fire marshal indicated this area is within their service area, and they can provide fire medical services to them. This is just an abbreviated table. It was in the staff report, kind of showing what improvements, what public improvements need to be made, and who's the responsible party. We did have the city development agreement or policy in your packet as well. So this shows whose responsibility it will be to fund the public improvements. It will be the developers, or it will be done by benefit district if he, you know, provides or forms the benefit district. So staff recommends forwarding this annexation request to the City Commission with a recommendation for approval, subject to that condition that the means for financing the improvements to East 902 Road will be finalized and accepted by the city before the ordinance is published. And so we'll move on to the rezoning request. They're requesting rezoning to RMO, which is multi-dwelling residential office uses or zoning district. This graph, just or this picture, shows the zoning and land uses in the area. These are part of the golden factors that we look at with rezonings. The highlighted area is currently zoned A. The request is to go to RMO. The city district is shown in white dashed lines on this picture. Everything to the north and west of that is outside of the city limits. The green highlighted areas are zoned A1 with rural platted subdivisions. The purple are the current equivalents of a platted rural subdivision. They are certificates of survey. The remainder of the land is A. It's either zoned A for agriculture, and it's either developed with rural residences or with some agricultural uses in the area. Properties in the city as primarily the Rock Chalk Park. It has the open space zoning for the actual parkland. And then we have the sports and recreation facilities to the southwest or the southeast of that with Rock Chalk Park and Sports Pavilion. And to the south of that, the hatched areas are CC600 zoning with conditions. The conditions are limiting the amount of commercial that's allowed in that district, and that's based on the comprehensive plan. So the proposed use would be compatible with the zoning and land uses in the area. We look at the character of the area. This shows the floodplain in the area, and that's basically the alignment of what the Baldwin Creek Interceptor Sanitary Sewer Line follows. There's trails throughout the area that also follow the easements that have been gathered for these sewer lines, as well as trails through the Rock Chalk Park area. It's primarily a rural area. The rural area is pretty well developed with residences. There's also quite a bit of woodland up in the northeast area around the floodplain. And the city is primarily sports and recreation uses with future commercial down to the south. So the proposed use and rezoning would be compatible with the character of the area. We look at, is it compliant with the recommendations of the comprehensive plan? The plan recommends medium and high density residential development near major roads, such as the K-10 Highway, and it actually recommends high density residential development along the SLT. And it encourages housing to be developed in areas where you can maximize the use of existing infrastructure. And as we looked at with the annexation request, most of the infrastructure is there. The sanitary sewer, the water, the storm sewer lines, I didn't show a picture of those, but there's also lines that can connect to. And so this would be compliant with those recommendations. It looks at, is it compliant with the area plan? This is in the area of the K-10 and Farmers Turnpike plan. It's the brown areas are areas that are designated for residential office uses. And the dashed area is a subject property. The area plan has a few other recommendations. They have certain uses that they recommend. So if the zoning is approved, when site plans come through, we would look to make sure the uses that are being proposed are some that are recommended in the plan. The plan recommends against large-scale apartment development. And we can see the concept plan that was provided with the rezoning to the right. It shows small-scale lots to allow for a mix of uses. It recommends a mix of residential office uses, and that should be possible with the kind of layout that we have. This is just a concept plan. It could change when development comes through, but we would expect something similar. The other factors we look at is what could be the detrimental effects on nearby properties. This is adjacent to the Rock Chalk Park property to the east, SLT to the west, and it does have the mini storage and the substation to the north. The implication might be more that those uses to the north might have a detrimental effect on the subject property, but due to underground gas lines and the overhead transmission lines, there's about 100 foot of easements along the south side of those more utilitarian uses. So there should be no detrimental effect on either property. The property is suitable to the uses. It's restricted under the A zoning. It's suitable for agricultural uses. However, as he intends to annex, it would no longer be suitable for the A zoning. It asks for the length of time it's been subject to zoned. It's developed at those three agricultural buildings and is used for agriculture. So it's not vacant property. The effects of the denial, if there were some negative impacts assumed to occur with the rezoning, then the denial would benefit the public health, safety, and welfare. But as we have not identified any negative impacts, there would be no benefit to the public by denying this application. And so staff recommends forwarding the rezoning request to the City Commission with a recommendation approval. And so those are the two recommendations.
Thank you, Mary. And do we have an applicant for these two items?
Yes. I'm David Hamby with BG Consultants. Appreciate Mary's staff time working on this, and we work closely together on this as far as understanding the application and so forth. And just to add a couple things, the intent, we work closely with the zoning classifications, RMO, on this, which is a mix of residential, multifamily, and also the office use. And the intent is that along the road would be the office uses where the existing buildings are, and then the remainder of that would be in lots with intended duplex development. As far as the road, I agree with the condition with the annexation that the road financing method be established before it gets published. The owner also wants that. We've met with the city engineer on that as far as options available for that, and we've also looked at some funding mechanisms for benefit district as well. We're having conversations with the property owners on the east side of the road as well. So that hasn't yet been worked out fully, but I anticipate that the City Commission will need to act on that as well. And so staff may not be able to commit the city to anything regarding that. And so that'll probably have to be addressed kind of at the same time as this action gets passed on as well. But with that, I think we agree with the recommendations, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. We may.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public who'd like to comment on this item? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing section of these two items and bring it up to the Commission for discussion.
I have a
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you. I have a question for staff on I don't want to call it a site, on the proposed concept plan. It shows a dashed line going through the west assumed platting lines. Is that additional offset for K-10 or additional right-of-way for K-10?
That is the K-10 overlay. It's the SLT K-10 overlay district, and there are special setbacks and special landscaping requirements in that area.
Okay.
I believe it's 500 feet from center line, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
On the concept plan, it's a 50-foot building setback as well.
Okay.
So that's 500 feet from center line of the K-10 of the highway property, and then additional 50 feet setback before you get the build?
No, the 500 feet, that's just an overlay. So it includes the landscaping requirements, requirements for buildings and fences, and then the setback, that's just from the property line.
Okay. Thank you.
I had a question for staff also, and this is just my own curiosity. What is a looped water system?
My understanding from talking to our utilities engineers, they do not like a water line that just ends because it doesn't get flushed out. Mm-hmm. doesn't get enough pressure, the water gets stale, so they want it to be looped so the water is continually moving through it. That's my understanding.
It has multiple sources of feed to get to locations.
And exit, I guess, as well. And how does water towers just fit into that as another source?
We have the engineer in the room who may want to speak better. And generally, a water tower will serve a certain area, have enough pressure to push water out to a certain, depending on topography and area and location. And so they call those pressure zones. And so utilities has to review developments in terms of whether or not there's enough water pressure to serve at the fire code pressures and the water pressures that a home needs to function properly. And so all of that gets looked at through this process.
Thank you.
Question for the applicant. I know this is just a concept plan, but we've had a lot of discussions about trying to go away from cul-de-sac, you know, when you look at neighborhoods in that cul-de-sac. Can you talk about why you, and I realize it's a concept plan, you're not locked in yet.
Right. So in this area, you notice that in the northwest corner comes a peak. Mm-hmm. And so trying to bring a road in there and then get back out again is very difficult. And so, you know, for circulation and pedestrian access, I like to see some sort of sidewalk that connects that. So I would guess we'd have, and this is a short cul-de-sac, it's probably only 150 feet. So, you know, whether you have a pedestrian sidewalk that goes through there or not, it kind of looks at what we do through there. But I would agree that it would be nice to have a road that would loop through there. But just because of the nature of that triangle, you see with the lots, they're not going to be ideal lots because they're real deep and somewhat narrow. It's just kind of the site. Triangle sites are difficult to work with. They're not square. Give me a rectangle. We can make all the efficient lots we can, but triangles are tough.
Madam Chair, if I may add, we have not reviewed the concept plan for any elements of subdivision regulations. So that was a good response, but I'm not sure that at the end of the day, this is the street system we end up with here. We do have some values of connectivity and have to look at what's the future land use to the north going to be and how and whether and, you know, when that all connects as well.
Thank you. Have any further discussion or questions?
I just have one more question for clarification. So on the first item, there's two points of finance agreements, one for the road system and one for the water.
It would be just one because they're both included in that East 902 road.
Okay.
There are a few different ways to look at it. There are on-site utilities. There are some utilities that get pulled off through other private properties. The developer has options in how to fund those. Their options are just private funding, so they just finance it themselves and pull it in. You typically will see benefit districts when multiple properties benefit, and it helps with building something as large as a collector street, for example. You see that with sewer benefit districts as well. Water is going, in this case, is there's be a water line in the street. There may need to be other utilities get pulled from the sanitary sewer there in the city park, from the city park, for example. So that all gets worked out later through the subdivision process. But what we're identifying is that usually if those infrastructure components are adjacent, they're already there, and so they're pulling them into the site. Here we're identifying that there's a city collector street that needs to be developed, and sometimes organizing the funding around that can be a little challenging, and so we're trying to vet that out as we discuss the annexation with the City Commission.
So as a matter of procedure, then if we pass it at this level, it then goes to a discussion with the city engineer prior to the City Commission, or is that... would that fall all the way through, and then it's incumbent upon the applicant and the city engineer to find an avenue for funding?
Well, it's really incumbent upon the applicant to work with the other stakeholders and maybe present the city a plan so that we can take that plan to the city commission for review and consideration. And it's multiple departments. It's Public Works and it's utilities, and planning has a process role in that. And so, but yes, there's quite a bit more work to do on that component of it. I think the idea with our local policy of the Planning Commission looking at annexation requests greater than 10 acres, because it's not a state statute, it's a local policy, is to put it to the land use test of the comp plan, sector plans. Does it make reasonable sense? I think we like to give you the infrastructure information too. I think it's important for you to weigh in on that as well. But that decision and how it gets funded and whether we accept whatever proposal the applicant brings back is up to the city commission.
Okay, thank you.
It's good to start by question for the applicant and then may transfer over to staff. So you've asked for RMO zoning here, but you talk about wanting to do duplex. Can you talk about your thought process? We've had a lot of requests for rezoning out of RMO, it seems like, lately. So I was sort of surprised to see you asking for that. And just how you got there and what... Yeah, just how you got there.
So the area plan talks about a residential office district. And in conversations with staff, RM, straight RM is not an acceptable use in the our residential office comp plan or area plan. And so in looking at that, that was one of the areas where we felt we could get the most RM with some office to get staff's recommendation of approval. Otherwise, we're fighting an uphill battle without staff recommendation of approval. So I say RMO is probably not the ideal zoning that we'd want for the property, that the owner would want for the property, but that's a fallback to get staff approval.
Yeah, sort of. I'll editorialize later. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So,
well, I would add that that's true. It may not be the applicant's greatest desire for RMO. You may recall that there was a property that to the north that presented a comp plan amendment to revise the comp plan designation from RMO to, I think, RS maybe, or if I recall. And that was not supported by staff. That wasn't ultimately supported by the Planning Commission, as I recall, if it got to you. And so based on those couple of things and our perspective that as we developed our sector plan, that west of K-10 and Farmers Turnpike sector plans, that we saw a need to have some office uses as this area develops as a neighborhood and as a continuation of the city. So that's where we're at.
I have a question for the applicant. Is the intention to use the existing, are they ag buildings or some kind of commercial structures that are on the property? Is the intent to use those as the office type structures, or will that likely be incorporated kind of throughout the plan? I know this is an early concept.
I don't know for sure, but being that he has some buildings there, and I assume if we went through the site plan process, those would have to bring up the current standards for aesthetics. Mm-hmm. But he may decide to use those. You know, there's a lot of different uses in the RMO, and, you know, I think of a vet office or something like that, animal health, where you could make some improvements and use those if you wanted to. I don't know what the intent is right now other than to leave those in place until there's some use for that.
Okay.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, we've looked at a couple of projects in this area and to the north of there, kind of looking to possibly add some more residential inventory to the city. And so it seems like this is kind of fitting with some of the discussions we've had recently, including our residential lot inventory report that we've had at mid-month. So do we have anyone who is ready to make a motion or show some intent towards the first of these two items, the annexation?
Madam Chairman. Yeah, I'm comfortable with this mainly because it does follow the comp plan. It seems like the applicants made the effort to look at what Horizon 2020 calls for and develop a zoning request that falls in line with that. So with that, I'm comfortable making a recommendation of annexation of approximately 16.8 acres to the City Commission. Recommendation of approval based on the findings of fact and the body of the staff report, subject to the condition one, that the means of financing the improvement of East 902 Road to City Collector Street standard shall be determined and accepted by the city prior to publication of the annexation ordinance.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any other discussion on the annexation? Seeing none?
Yes.
Oh, you do? Okay, go ahead.
So,
Commissioner Kelly.
I just worry that we may be coming back later and ask for a rezoning from RMO to something different.
Possible.
I mean, and I think the housing study, which we just looked at, shows that we need quality housing. But I do think that, you know, the one thing that I hope is that if we actually zone it for mixed use, that we'll get mixed use out of it. You know, I think we often talk about it's going to be mixed use, and we talk about how we want neighborhoods to have those other options there. And hopefully, you know, especially, I mean, this is sort of far out from some stuff right now, you know, I mean, from amenities and things like that. So I hope we use that. That's my only hesitation. I think I'll support the motion, but I just want to make sure that when we say RMO and we zone it for RMO and it's in our plan for RMO, that we actually do RMO development. Sounded like the beginning of a good rap right there for a minute. So that's my only comment.
Thank you. Do we have any other further comment on the annexation? We'll vote separately. Okay, we'll take a vote. All in favor? And opposed? Looks like we have a unanimous. And for the item 1B, do we have anyone who'd like to make a motion on that?
Before I make the motion, I was curious about Commissioner Kelly's leading questions with there. I was going to ask him, but I didn't want to spoil any reveal that he may have had with that. Short of placing a condition on this, I hope a future commission, if they see a rezoning request for this, actually consults the minutes, because I share Commissioner Kelly's concern that this changes in shape, but you know, we'll have to see, I suppose. Even though I share Commissioner Kelly's reservations, I'm still comfortable making a motion to the rezoning request for approximately 16.8 acres from A agricultural district to RMO multi-dwelling residential office district upon annexation, and forward it to the City Commission with a recommendation of approval based on the findings of fact found in the body of the staff report.
We have a motion from Commissioner Sands and a second from Commissioner Struckoff. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? And opposed? Unanimous again. Okay, item number two, text amendment.
The first item that I will talk to you this evening about is a text amendment regarding Mini Warehouse. This item starts from the direction from the City Commission. This follows the rezoning that we talked about a couple of months ago from the IBP district, with the conditions for the professional living and storage project that require the IL zoning to allow for their project that was for an enclosed climate-controlled facility, that mini storage is not allowed in the IBP district. And the commission directed staff to draft a text amendment, and that's where we got to for this particular project. What we found was that the current code does not distinguish between the various types of mini storage, and one of the other things that staff has been working on was a type of use car condos, which we'll talk a little bit about, that one of our frequent applicants has been talking to us about, a particular use that is unique. There is a particular business in DeSoto where those units are actually owned, where you can have private storage, but you can also do certain things in those particular units, and we don't really have a good use category in our code to be able to address that particular use, and so this was a good time to be able to look at that as well. Took a quick survey of where we find mini storage or mini warehouse or self-storage, goes by a lot of different names, where we find that use in locally in Lawrence. There are a few that are outside of Lawrence as well. Would like to note that when we talk about storage of boats and RVs, that is also a specific use in the development code. It's listed under vehicle use category, which is a commercial use. Mini warehouse is a use that is listed under the industrial use category. So we find it kind of spread out in the community. We find it in commercial zoning in the CS district, as well as some IL and some IG locations as well. Looking at our text amendment, there are two criteria that we look at: whether the proposed text amendment corrects an error or inconsistency in the code, or meets a changing condition, and this certainly does meet that criteria. The other criteria is whether that text amendment is consistent with the comprehensive plan, and in this particular case we also think that it does meet the context of the comprehensive plan. The articles that are being amended by this proposed text amendment are the use table, the terminology, and the use standards. We published also Article 9, the parking, but after looking and reviewing the proposed text amendment, we decided that we did not need to actually amend specifically the parking table. We can look at that as we're working through some of the parking standards. If we think that we need to, we don't. Specifically, we did address some of the parking issues in the use standards for this specific use. So the way the use works out in the use tables, we broke out the types of mini warehouse into climate controlled as its own use. Mini warehouse, as we typically think of it in its conventional form, is exterior mini warehouse where you can access it individually, kind of those garage doors. And then a type of mini warehouse where they're converted storage containers, and then the garage condos, which is something we don't see locally, but we very well may. We have scheduled many of those uses to be permitted uses in the various districts. In some of those districts, you'll see that they are permitted, but with as a special use permit. All of them are subject to specific design standards. You go back and look at that table, or I'm sorry, this graphic, what we did find and conclude in some of that survey is that we are seeing some of those mini storage projects today have some component of both climate controlled and kind of the conventional mini storage, but they also have some accessory things going on as well. There's a small component of commercial that goes on in some of these facilities. There's also some small component of some exterior storage going on. So that was also addressed in some of the recommended design standards in Article 5 that we'll talk about in just a moment. This is an example where we have both the climate controlled and the exterior. This project, under the proposed regulations, would require or could be located in the CS zoning. It could be located in the IL zoning, but would require a special use permit. It could be located in the IM or the IG zoning. The proposed text amendment would introduce these different uses as specific independent uses with those definitions described individually. The mini warehouse with the climate-controlled use, and hopefully you can read this. That building or group of buildings containing various sizes of individual or compartmentalized controlled access stalls, lockers, or units designed for the individual access of that storage unit from within an access controlled area, accessed by the individuals for the storing of household and personal property within the enclosed building is climate controlled, central heating and air conditioning. Storage units shall not be used for workshops, hobby shops, manufacturing, retail, sales, or similar uses, and human occupancy shall not be limited that is required for transport to arrange and maintain their stored materials. So these are pretty standard definitions that we looked at from other communities, and we saw some of those examples in your packet. This is an example of what we looked at for the professional living and storage project, that that property that was rezoned from IDP to IL. There's an additional definition, or more to that definition, that goes on for this particular use, that those units are, again, not permitted for human occupancy, that commercial transactions are prohibited, and that they're accessed from within the building. The exterior mini warehouse, this is, again, is trying to distinguish between that climate controlled and that more conventional unit. Again, it has some of those same properties that we've talked about in other storage uses, that they're not permitted for workshops, hobby shops, manufacturing, retail sales, that human occupancy piece is limited to just those pieces that allow you to move things in and out or maintaining your materials. These are just a couple examples of some of those things where we might find those uses in the CS, IL, IM, and IG districts. This would be a use that would be permitted by right. It doesn't necessarily have to have a special use permit. It would be subject to those design standards that we'll talk about that would be found in Article 5. Self-storage containers, there is an example of that today. It's located on East 23rd Street. We're working with that property owner on that particular application right now, making a distinction between those containers that are set out on properties on a temporary basis, somebody who has like a pod where you're moving and you're having that property, that unit at your house where you're in the process of moving or unloading, versus something that is more permanent. So it has some of those similar components to it. It's typically what it would look like. It would be allowed in the IL district with a special use permit. Remember that IL district does have some of those commercial components, so we do want to be thoughtful about how we are using our IL district. The garage condo, this particular district does allow for a little bit more activity level to it, that does allow some of that hobby type of activity, and that's where we're trying to provide some response to this use that we think may be coming our way. Those uses may have a clubhouse associated with it, and that's where we're going to find probably those restrooms and those amenities that go with it, that those uses are not necessarily for each individual unit. We did need to amend a little bit the warehousing and storage, the light unit, that the customer access is not generally provided. There may be a small amount of that occurs, but that this use, wholesaling, storage, and warehousing, it really is a different use than mini warehouse than what we're talking about. Some of the use standards that we've added, and I've just tried to cover this very generally. We've got more detail in your packet, and I can pull that up if we want to look at it more specifically. It's structured the way we would find other use standards in the development code, the applicability. There are some architectural standards about doors and how those would face streets or not face streets, building entrances and openings, that there would control standards for how we handle exterior storage, screening requirements, that there are paved surfaces, but we do allow compacted gravel in some of the industrial-based districts, how we treat parking, that instead of having a large parking area, that you can count your required parking by those individual units, and how you handle accessory uses associated with this particular type of use. Staff's recommendation is for approval of this proposed text amendment. Happy to answer any questions. I do want to thank Scott and Jeff for being ghost authors while I was on vacation last week. So,
thank you, Sandy.
Sure.
There is no applicant for this item, but do we have any comments we'd like to hear from the public on this? None? All right. So we bring it up to the commission.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Commissioner Carpenter.
I don't so much have a question as a comment that really appreciated this report. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really put this use category in perspective on how it's distributed around the city, all the types. And I believe you used one of you ghost authors, or maybe you, Sandy, used the term more nuanced approach. I suspect that's a Jeff, you know? But phrase, but anyway.
Scott probably had to get to a meeting.
Anyhow, I'd certainly like to see this with some of the other categories because it really gives a more in-depth understanding of what we're talking about when we get involved with some of these issues. And certainly you've picked up some uses that I don't think we've normally thought about, mm-hmm. and have addressed those, especially this the container storage, because I remember going to a presentation on that last year at the Kansas APA convention or meetings that talked about that and the problems some cities were having. So we're ahead of the game here. So I really think it's a great report, especially giving us, you know, pictures of everything and dividing these categories up. I think it's clearer to everybody what's going to happen and what's expected with the design. And I think it solves one of those issues that required bending the rules a bit to the point that it's caused some other discussions. So thank you for doing that. And I'm happy to support recommending this one for approval to the City Commission after we have other discussion.
Thank you. And do we have other discussion?
I'll just note that the Garber property that we just talked about, wasn't that, that was going to be a mini warehouse storage up there?
To the north.
We had the gateway discussion instead. Mm-hmm. There was some question about what the applicant should expect and what the city should expect from the applicant as well in a place like that. And this does I think do a great job of addressing those and making those expectations clear for all these different types of facilities, for sure.
And I would like to reiterate Commissioner Carpenter's comments that it was a great, thorough report, and I was kind of surprised to see how many different sites were you doing mini storage of different kinds, or storage, and just how many different kinds there were going on. So I'm glad that we've been kind of proactive and looked at this as we have. I did have a question for Sandy, and that is the shipping containers type storage units. Those were allowed pretty much in all the same zonings that other kinds of exterior access storage were allowed. Is that something that the community would be comfortable with, or are neighbors going to want to differentiate between, I mean, I'm thinking in the CS and IL that may be closer to residential, not so much the more industrial type areas. Is there any concern with that, do you think?
Almost all of our industrial districts and a lot of our CS districts are adjacent to residential in one way or another. So I don't think we can avoid that conflict. I think the fact that we have one, that we have a lot of requirements about buffer yards, especially when we have IL adjacent to any of the R districts, and then having some of the screening requirements in the design standards that we didn't have before, I think help tremendously. It'll be a case-by-case basis, and then there are some other things in the development code in Article 11 that allow the planning director to add some additional landscaping if it's necessary. So the containers are a really odd situation, so I don't know that we'll see a lot of it. We certainly have one property that's doing it right now. There's some building code implications as well. So how much of that we really see, I don't know.
Okay.
We're focusing on the we've had, the reason we included it is because we are seeing some demand for it. And so we're working on one now where we're concentrating more on the periphery screening than trying to make containers look like a nice building, because that's not going to happen. So there are ways that we think the code provides us the ability to protect those adjacent owners from the aesthetics of such a use.
Thank you.
I have seen those containers in my neighborhood. There's one house that has one on the street and one in their driveway, and it's an eyesore, and it's been there for a long time. And I was wondering, and I hadn't seen it anywhere else around town, so I didn't know. I mean, I was surprised to see it here.
We get, so that's a different use for those containers, those pods. And they're pretty popular now as a moving vehicle, method of moving. And so, in fact, we talked about it today, that we're proposing a property maintenance code amendment that will address it a little bit more than what our code does now. We treat them as, we will propose to treat them as temporary for those move-in times.
Okay.
Give a certain number of days for someone to move out and then someone else to move in. Otherwise, they can't locate in front plane of the home. And we also talked about whether or not they can qualify as an accessory structure, like a garden shed or something. That we also see them at the fraternities and sororities during the summer when there's mass exodus and they want somewhere to store their so that there's multiple discussions we're having about those containers right now, and you're likely to see some code brought forth pretty soon that addresses them. But we have dealt with them on a complaint basis. From a temporary basis. I mean, we still interpret our code to not allow them as a permanent structure. Otherwise, they will need to meet our setbacks and our building code.
Commissioner Kelly.
So without going too far down the shipping container road here, I was glad to hear that last part, because there are ways of using shipping containers that can look very aesthetic and very nice. So, yay.
Yay.
I don't want to classify them all as being awful, and right. As long as we're thinking about, I mean, it's a nice renewable resource. There's more shipping containers than there are things to ship.
So do I hear you correctly that the pod discussion, that kind of container is not really included in
correct.
This text?
This
amendment?
Is more permanent, almost acting as a building for storage units that are site planned. So we're not talking about residential use here. We're talking about commercial and industrial sites.
Okay. So that'll be another discussion for another time.
But not for this body.
Excellent.
Our property maintenance code gets considered by the City Commission.
All right.
Scott, it's been there so long, I thought it was a permanent.
You need to know about it before we can...
It is complaint-based.
So if you're willing to lodge a complaint, we can look at it.
Do we have further comments? Commissioner Struckoff.
I'm just going to make a motion.
Excellent.
I move that we forward the proposed amendment to Articles 4, 5, and 9 and 17 of the Development Code, defining certain types of storage uses and permitting some uses in the IBP district, to the Lawrence City Commission with a recommendation for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Commissioner Carpenter. Any other discussion? All in favor of the text amendment? And opposed? We are unanimous. All right, item 3, text amendment, and another text amendment for the recording of documents with the Register of Deeds. Even more fascinating than that before.
So I'm going to go through this very quickly. You, last month, we initiated the text amendment to modify the subdivision regulations, basically for a technical change to allow for recording documents on paper versus Mylar. So the chairs, past chairs who have signed subdivision plats, the plastic stuff, Mylar that you've signed, in the future chairs, you will be signing paper. That's really the scope of what we're talking about. It's a technical amendment to the subdivision regulations. It's a joint document to both city and the county codes. This will end up going both to the city commission, to the county commission. And there's one piece in the city code This was my one plastic versus paper. Okay. Institutional development plans. That's when I couldn't pull up. So you initiated the text amendment. Staff report was virtually drafted from that request to have you initiate that text amendment. We're asking that you please approve the text amendment that was in your packet. Happy to answer any questions. It really is plastic versus paper. The Register of Deeds has already made their change, so they prefer the paper. It's easier to manage, it's more efficient, it's less expensive, less costly to applicants to handle the paper. So.
Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome.
We may yet have questions. And I have to ask, are there any members of the public who would like to talk about paper versus Mylar? Not at this time? All right, it comes to the commission.
I actually have a question for staff. From what I understand of the recommendation, it was based on the perceived obsolescence of the distinction, that Mylar isn't required anymore because of conventional means of transmitting information digitally and storing it digitally, that paper tends not to be as the lack of durability of paper is not an issue like it would have been in the past. Is that fair assumption?
It's actually the Mylar was a more durable material,
sure,
than paper. Some of the processes that they use for printing on the Mylar, things that were happening, the laser printing, the ink would fleck off. So it wasn't producing very well. They would try and go and put stamps on that Mylar, and the stamps would smear. It's costly to, if a signature was wrong, if there was an error in something, it was costly to reproduce and get all of those signatures again. There was a lot of confusion between the surveyors and the county staff. Some documents were acceptable to be on paper, some documents were not. So county met with a number of different departments. Oddly, we were not one of the departments that were included in that discussion. They came to the conclusion, they adopted a resolution September of last year to go ahead and make that change to universally accept paper as a medium because of all the different digital processes that they just don't even store those documents anymore. Once they are scanned and recorded, they are turned back to everybody. So
this truly is a paper versus plastic question. You're not factoring in the digital storage of the information at all.
No. Okay.
Any other comments, questions?
Motions?
All
right.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, nobody else
wanted it. I move that we forward the proposed amendment amending the Land Development Code and permitting the submission of final documents for recording purposes to be printed on any media that will produce a clear image for scanning and microfilming, and forward it with a recommendation for approval. Now, we are not recommending to the City Commission. We are just, are we?
Well, yes, to the city and the county.
Both? Okay.
It's in our joint subdivision regulations.
Okay. Then I would move that we forward the recommendation for approval to the city and county commissions.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion?
Well, just one comment that we're actually going from a non-renewable to a renewable resource in doing this. So that wasn't mentioned. So, yay, team.
But, all in favor of paper? Opposed? You are unanimous. And to our item four, we have a comprehensive plan amendment to discuss the transportation chapter. Comes with handouts.
Those of you on the MPO know we like to test the renewable resource of paper. Just throw it off.
Too bad you're going on Mylar.
Good evening. Jeff Crick with the City County Planning Office. The item before you this evening is a comprehensive plan amendment to Chapter 8 of Horizon 2020, which is the transportation chapter. I won't steal too much of Ashley's thunder. She'll give you a very in-depth rundown of Transportation 2040, but I'll just mention some of the points that are pertinent to Horizon 2020. It's been a link document since 2011. Actually, this will be its third amendment that will actually incorporate the plan to it. Horizon 2030 may have served as the first one, and then we've had Horizon 2040 Volume 1, which has just lapsed out to Horizon... Get my plans mixed up. Transportation 2040 Volume 2, which is the one that was recently adopted by the MPO Policy Board and has been completed. The MTP, or the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, is updated every 5 years by federal mandate. So it has to go through the cycle every 5 years, so that's why you're seeing this again. We're taking the newest version and incorporating it into Chapter 8 of Horizon 2020. With that, I'll very happily turn it over for Ashley.
Thank you very much. So again, my name is Ashley Myers, and I'm a transportation planner with the Lawrence Douglas County Metropolitan Planning Organization, or MPO, and with the city. And I am here to talk a little bit about Transportation 2040, but first, a tiny bit about what an MPO is. So MPOs are federally funded and federally required once an urbanized area hits 50,000 people. So Lawrence became an MPO in the 80s, and we've had some version of an MPO since then. MPOs do transportation planning. And our planning area is the entire county, and so we do transportation planning for all forms of transportation, so walking, biking, transit, and for cars as well. Now, Transportation 2040 is one of the required documents that we must do federally, and as Jeff said, we have to do it every 5 years, and so it's time again. And here's a brief overview of what Transportation 2040 is. It's our long-range plan looking out to the year 2040. And so it's a systems plan, so it's looking at all of the various forms of transportation and bringing them together to create one plan. And it's multimodal, so we think about projects and how they can fit together. We're working to fill gaps in the system in order to improve our entire transportation network. Now, Transportation 2040 brings together all of the other plans that we've done in the last 5 years, so the regional pedestrian plan, the countywide bike plan, and then the various transit plans as well. And it's a performance-based plan, so there's a lot of data in it. And we're going to be doing some annual reporting on performance measures, and we'll see how we've done over time. Now, federally, it's required to be done every 5 years, and it has to cover 20 years, which is why it looks out to the year 2040. And it must be fiscally constrained. So that means it can't just be a wish list of projects. It has to be projects that we can reasonably expect to pay for. Again, our planning area is all of Douglas County. And this plan was guided by a steering committee, which the MPO Policy Board approved, and a couple of you all served on. And this started with some public outreach in the winter of 2016-2017, and it wrapped up in March of this year when the MPO Policy Board approved it. There was a lot of public involvement in the process. We had 36 stakeholder interviews, 38 mobile meetings, 9 open houses, and over 1,600 survey responses, which we were pretty pleased with. And one of the questions we asked people is, what do you think the main priority should be for transportation? And not surprisingly, the result was to move people. And a way to do that is to maintain roads and sidewalks and bikeways. So the goals and objectives, there's 4 goals, and then there's some corresponding objectives, and the main themes of those goals are access and choices, mobility and prosperity, preservation, safety and security, and sustain and enhance. As as I mentioned, this plan pulls together all the other plans that we've done, and so we looked at the existing conditions and identified needs in those plans, and then also looked at just like how much it would cost to operate transit looking out to the year 2040. And we discovered there's $1.7 billion worth of needs, which kind of blows my mind. But then we looked at how much funding we think we could possibly have. And by looking at how much funding each of the agencies, so the City of Lawrence, Eudora, Baldwin City, and such, and then Lawrence Transit has, so we projected we have $1.5 billion worth of revenues. And then we're supposed to federally look at operations and maintenance, so making sure we have enough money to like clear snow and keep things at a minimum. We subtract that out. So we have $926 million available for projects. Now, this plan also includes the major thoroughfares, which is a map that is allowed by Kansas state statute to designate roads as main traffic ways. And we use this to balance land use and through movement, and really for the development purposes. And you all use it, the county uses it, the city uses it for corridor preservation, access management, and roadway design. So here's the county look, and then here's the city. Now, the plan has more than just strategies, or more than just projects, sorry, there's strategies. So we have various multimodal strategies that are overarching for all of them. So we encourage safe and efficient traveling through multimodal networks, continue a transparent and coordinated process, and coordinate decision-making for balancing land use and environmental impacts. For transit, we have several strategies, but a main one here is to implement the different studies we've done, so the comprehensive operations analysis and the bus transfer location analysis. For pedestrian, we have implement the regional pedestrian plan, so fill the sidewalk gaps that we've identified that are on the priority network. Bikeway, implement the countywide bikeway plan. And here's a view. And for roadways, this map shows all the projects that we have in the plan, roadway projects, and at a minimum, maintain existing conditions, design and build roadways for the safety of all users, and deploy technology and other alternative strategies to relieve congestion. This is the last slide for you, and this is showing where you can find Transportation 2040. So it's lawrenceks.org/MPO/T2040. And on the far left, where it says Transportation 2040, that is the actual PDF of the document. It is about 450 pages long, but most of that are the appendices because we had so much public comment we needed to document it. So the plan itself is about 200 pages. The middle one is the summary for you, and then the last one is the interactive mapping portal, which we're pretty excited about. Almost all the maps that are in the plan, when you click on it, it opens a new web browser, and then you can zoom in on the data. And it's a lot more user-friendly, and you can see a lot more than just looking at a little map on a page. So we recommend approval of this requested amendment, and we entertain questions.
Thank you very much, Ashley. Sure. Do we have any public comment on this item? We would have you sign in, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you want to follow along, you could look at your agenda, page 372. My name is Michael Allman. Let me sign in here first. Good evening, Michael Allman. I'm speaking for myself this evening. I live at 1311 Prairie Avenue. I'm speaking about the interrelationship of Transportation 2040 and Plan 2040, the upcoming new comprehensive plan, specifically regarding
Michael, can I interrupt for a minute? I think you said page 372. I've got digital page 472, document page 372. Are you right? Oh. It's document.
I guess our browsers work differently.
Make sure that at least on my screen it's
472.
Thank you.
At least you're, I assume you're referring to your comments in your graphic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, our browsers must log it to.
I just want to make sure they were looking at.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is much more clear.
Okay.
That would have been confusing.
372 is a little off topic for you. So.
There's many, many pages of public comment. So what I wanted to point out was that both plans, both update plans, have the very same map for urban growth area, for future land use growth. Tier 2, which is green, this area here, is stated for annexation and for growth within the horizon of the plan. What I'm concerned with is that this is making a major change compared to the previous comprehensive plan, which is actually as August 2017. This map appears, well, let me show you. First of all, this is the urban growth area in the current comprehensive plan. This is the Wakarusa River. The new plan takes that all the way down to the Wakarusa River, that south of K-10, if you follow where I'm at. That same map is part of Plan 2040 and Transportation 2040, the exact same map. And I'm concerned that transportation planning and land use planning are inextricably linked, which both plans say that, and you know that, we all know that. So what you do with this plan tonight ties in and, in a sense, legitimizes how this will appear in Plan 2040 as well, which you will be seeing within a few months, probably. Currently, I better talk fast. More detail. The plan goals, annexation into Lawrence of this area is intended within Tier 2, but also this policy says protect and preserve natural environmental features and sensitive lands, which include floodway, floodplain, high-quality agricultural soils, wetlands, and stream corridors. This area is currently protected in the comprehensive plan. By adopting this map in this context and Plan 2040, you will be dramatically expanding the urban growth area into this area south of K-10, into these sensitive lands. And I request that you have the staff amend that map and pull that line back to where it currently exists in our current Horizon 2020. And I think I've used my time.
You did. Thank you. Do we have any other public comment on this item? With that, we'll close the public portion and bring it up to the commission for discussion. Commissioner Kelly.
Staff, would you like to address that?
Yeah, so maybe a few things going on here, a little bit of a chicken and egg with the both plans that were in process at the same time. T-2040 beat P-2040. The bets were on that to happen because, frankly, it's a little bit less of a challenge to do our transportation planning here. But I would say that really what's happening, though, is these maps are doing different things for in our proposed comprehensive plan that will get underway here through a formal process. It's trying to lay out areas of potential development, and it doesn't change the urban growth area. We'll still have an urban growth area that goes south of even this, but it's intended to say these are areas that could be served with infrastructure, and you'll see more of that in the future. What really governs the thing that Michael brings forward is the revised Southern Development Plan, which is a specific sector plan, which has been under review with our K-10 crossing project, if, as you recall, and that's where the designation of land use is really applied because it's more specific of the plans. So especially in Transportation 2040, the idea is just to reflect that this general area is will be is planned to be urbanized, like it has in multiple plans before this one. So it's more the 30,000 foot level than the floodplain boundary level.
So can I just clarify that, reread that in my own mind? So just because it is included in Tier 2 doesn't mean necessarily that it is slated for a particular kind of development. It could be a park, it could be a conservation area, but that it would is intended to be at some point inside the city limits. And then the revised southern
well, potentially.
Area.
It's an area that could be annexed and receive urban services. That's what it means from our perspective.
The revised southern development plan would be more detailed as far as what...
The revised southern development plan does look at more layers of development components than just a potential boundary for the area.
Okay. Thank you. I'll go again. And also for staff. So in terms of this chicken and egg, is we have these two plans, and I'm eternally grateful that we do not have to do our comprehensive plan every 5 years, so we wouldn't have made it. In terms of putting the urban growth tiers in the transportation plan, which is now we're looking at sooner without having had the full discussion of those in our comprehensive plan, what is our role with that? I mean, I don't feel as though we are grandfathering it if we put it in Transportation 2040, because I think it will could retroactively be changed if we changed it.
Right. It's a very fair comment, and the intent of the tiers anyway go to how we manage growth more than anything. That really relates practically to how we review and address annexations, requests for annexations, and so T-2040 is doing different things, in my opinion, than what we would look to the new comprehensive plan to do. So I acknowledge that it presents a little bit of a conflict, if you will, between our planning documents at this point, but I'm less concerned because, as you saw this evening, we're using our current comprehensive plan, Horizon 2020, to judge annexation requests. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Kelly.
So the whole concept of Tier 1, 2, and 3 is new within Plan 2040. Is that correct?
Correct.
And that hasn't undergone any type of review other than from the steering committee. And I mean, there's been quite a bit of public review of it, but it hasn't been authorized by Planning Commission, County Commission, or City Commission. Correct.
Correct.
So just as a discussion item for us, this sort of validates that idea of Tier 1, 2, and 3 by including it in the transportation plan. That's just something I want to take a pause on here for just a second and think through, because it's overlapping the two plans, and just something to think about. For those who aren't familiar with that, it's a new concept that for our comprehensive plan.
Commissioner Payden.
So I can appreciate the Tier 1, 2, and 3 and sort of directing where what's available for public services. So I guess I'm kind of curious. We have in our plans that we want to protect sensitive lands, and it is a sensitive land. So what do we have available to actually do that? I mean, what are the teeth behind being able to protect lands that we want to protect?
Yeah.
So the comprehensive plan policies, whether it's existing comp plan or whatever we do with the new plan, will be in policy form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not code until we implement our codes. So we implement our codes through the zoning document, both county and city, and the subdivision regulations. And so floodplain regulations and our requirements to protect certain sensitive lands through the platting process and site planning process or the development regulations we have today. Those are based on the comprehensive plan policies to protect certain types of sensitive lands.
So I might ask for a couple specific examples, but one thing I want to kind of ask about is that we had something in the past where I don't exactly remember what the policy was, but that a particular parcel had to have particular amount of the lands preserved and the developer took it out. So what do we have to prevent that, and what are some specific examples of, say, somewhere we've used our policies mm-hmm. to?
So the Lynx development, if you get a chance to drive through that development, it's phase one is about complete now. It's the development east of Rock Chalk Park, Wakarusa Extended now, in Queens Road. We required, it started out with a 20% requirement because they had woods, hardwoods on their property to protect and preserve that through the platting process. So we, through that final preliminary and final plat, they lay out a tract of land that protects those woods. And within it, there may be a creek even. So they owed us, we exacted 20% just through our normal regulations. We incentivize additional protection with some density bonuses that they actually took advantage of. And so they ended up taking, preserving more than 20%. So that's how the carrot and stick kind of had worked in that particular development. And so that's one example. For those that recall, there was a annexation and development at 31st Street and Michigan Street. The corner was a kind of a triangular piece there, and it was bisected with a good amount of floodplain. And so that was an area that got put into a subdivision tract. And the code does allow some development in floodplain. So there was a little bit of fill in the floodplain just to square it off, kind of square off the line to make it developable. And then the majority of that was preserved through, again, platting. And the instrument there is usually a tract or easements to preserve that. So even today, where our urban growth boundary extends so far out, if an application comes in, we have comp plan policies and, in most instances now, sector plans that distinguish where floodplain areas are, where open space is intended to go, and then that gets implemented through our platting and rezoning processes. So again, in the example of K-10 Crossing, they didn't take the entire thing down to the floodway. There is a good amount of that property that was proposed to have open space zoning, protecting those floodplains and a little bit of wetland area, as I recall. So that's how it gets implemented. Whereas this is a map that's simply laying out the potential to urbanize in some way, some manner. Doesn't say whether it's open space, whether it's commercial, whether it's residential, or what.
I mean, as I understand it, that would really be trying to serve the purpose of a development pattern that is not leapfrogging. Is that
right? Right. So when we have the discussion about the new plan, when you see the tiers of growth, they don't designate land use. That's what other plans do. That's what our sector plans do and different things. Those are the areas that we feel we should be directing growth to because it makes financial sense for the city, the taxpayers, the ratepayers, and for the developers. And it's a balance of what we think amount of area that can hold the 20-year estimated growth that we have in this plan. So it's all balanced out pretty well, I think. We'll present that to you soon.
So I have a question to pick up on Commissioner to pick up on Commissioner Kelly's observation about the leapfrogging plans. This is the tier 1, 2, 3 is just a conceptual model at this point to illustrate potential growth. But one way or another, it seems like some form of amendment to this document may be called for, because this conceptual plan, this conceptual illustration, not being yet approved by, as part of Horizon 2040, when that document is, goes through a formal review, should those tiers be amended, would that then be propagated back out to the documents that have already been published?
Yeah, we would need to go back in and amend it. In T2040, it's in a section of population forecast, mm-hmm. and just trying to show where we have the ability to grow so that our transportation planning and land use planning is matching up. So I agree. That's why we're amending Horizon 2020 right now, is because we've got a new transportation plan. And so if our comp plan changes, effectively changes this, we'll have to go into this document and revise it as well.
Thanks.
We were hoping for a little bit closer marriage of the two plans, frankly, and we've gotten off track a little bit.
I just think this is a very good discussion, and I think we should be reminded of this discussion when Horizon 20, whatever we're calling the new plan is, when it finally gets here, that we be reminded that of this type of discussion when we get to that, and just how we're trying to mesh these multiple plans.
And given that this document is amended every 5 years, those tiers will move. Right? Those projected population growth centers at margins of the city will change. They will grow, they may shrink through amendment, transportation plan will show that change on a five-year basis, whereas our comprehensive plan will possibly supersede it, but only, it'll be amended every 20 years, but there will be opportunities to amend it as well. I see this as a conceptual plan that will change with every T2040 or with every transportation plan amendment.
I would also say the document could not have been developed without using those tiers. The background data that fed into those is still very valid in terms of where the city has services currently or will likely. So even if, as we get into the comprehensive plan, if those start to change and mold, some of the background data certainly was required to feed into this Transportation 2040. So I think that's very appropriate. And it doesn't especially bother me knowing how much time goes into all of these plans, that we may accept, if we accept that the Transportation 2040 does include those tiers and then have that full body discussion with the comprehensive plan, that will then have ramifications for what we had previously approved, because the comprehensive plan would trump the what was in the transportation plan. You have further discussion?
Just to say, it's a magnificent document. This one is pretty awesome. 425 pages, that's pretty good too.
I have a question.
So we're saying that Commissioner Struckoff served on that committee? Yes,
so,
Commissioner Kelly.
So what's the ramifications if we don't approve tonight? If we think that this idea is ahead of its time and we don't feel comfortable moving forward on it, what does that mean?
Well, the MPO is an interesting document. It's already been approved by the MPO Policy Board, which is a governing body in and of itself. And so it is the plan that we will use to do transportation planning. What it means if it doesn't get put into the comprehensive plan is that we'll still probably use it to do our recommendations, but it won't have the support of an approval. The importance of it in our mind is that there's a link in that major thoroughfares map that Ashley showed you in our subdivision regulations that gives us the legal support to tell developers, here's the classification of street that you that we expect you to develop, residential, collector, or arterial street. And so you're seeing some of that lately with Mercado Development, for example, or in the Links, Wakarusa was a certain classified street. So it gives us that ability, and their subdivision regulations say that that map has to be approved by the governing bodies. And that map lies within this document. And so as that map changes, and it has here, I believe, in some ways, we would like the legal support for that to carry forward as we've made decisions about it. And so that's kind of the important element of it in my mind. If I'm sort of weighting this map in discussion, it's not a map we look to necessarily to make decisions about transportation. It was a map intended to say, hey, this is an area and others like it that the city may be urbanizing or development may be urbanizing in the future. And frankly, that hasn't changed. Yes, Michael brings a good point about the details of where exactly that line is, but as I've portrayed, I believe that the more specific sector plan actually speaks to that issue, not T2040.
Do we have anyone interested in making a motion on our comprehensive plan amendment? Commissioner Sinclair?
First, I'd like to thank Mr. Allman for coming and making those comments, prompting good discussion about this issue. But I would make a motion to approve the Horizon 2020 Comprehensive Plan Amendment, incorporating the new Transportation 2040 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, and forwarding it to the county and city commissions with a recommendation for approval.
Thank you. We have a motion. Do we have a comment from staff?
Just a friendly amendment to also authorize the chair to sign the PCR number 18-00189 as well, which is our joint resolution.
Would you be willing to make that
your resolution
addition to your motion?
Yes, I would incorporate
that's what he meant to do.
What Scott just said into what I just said.
It's our official way of bringing it into the plan.
Do we have a second?
Yes.
We do. Commissioner Struckoff. Do we have further comment? Seems like there's been a fair amount that of people that may not be entirely on the same page. Do we want to hear anything more?
I know I'm new here, but I just want to commend the staff and the public who have participated in the process. I mean, I think it is a magnificent document. I like the multimodal nature of it. It covers by covering pedestrian and bicycle transportation as well as automobile and public transit. I think it does a pretty remarkable job, and also incorporating economic justice zones. I think it's a really comprehensive document that really covers a lot of ground. So just a commendation on that part.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
So I'm going to vote against it, even though I think it's going to pass. Just to be, and sometimes we do that in our votes, to sort of just keep a memory that issue is out there. I'm worried about leapfrogging, I think is what someone used, plan before plan, and validating this idea of tier 1, 2, and 3 before that's had. I think the steering committee, and I'm a member of it, has done a good job of coming up with that. So it's not really that I'm against tier 1, 2, and 3, but I want to honor the process, and I don't want to pre-validate that process before it's in front of us, the county and the city commission.
And I appreciate that perspective and also just keeping us mindful of that. I'm going to vote for it, but with the understanding that we will have that full discussion of Tier 1, 2, and 3 with the comprehensive plan, and that I don't feel overly tied to it because of, and I'm not necessarily against it or for it in that regard, but just I don't feel necessarily that we have tied ourselves into it by supporting the Transportation 2040.
I would add that many of the specific concerns that we have as citizens or commissioners, we do have a southern plan that needs to be developed, and that is really going to be an important part of this this development down there. Under the those specific features of that plan are going to be extremely important, and so that also feeds into some of my some of the concerns I share with Commissioner Kelly about leapfrogging plans. Is that one, that plan especially, is going to be, that area plan is going to be a critical one.
Commissioner Baden?
I think that I have long felt like Lawrence has a lot of sprawl, but after visiting lots of other places, it doesn't have a lot of leapfrogging. And I think that's because we've made an attempt to do things like this, if not specifically this. However, I mean, you can look at lots of communities around the country who have sort of different, I guess it's really iterations of the urban growth boundary. Some of those have some bad consequences as a result of those boundaries, and good, so they have sort of both. But I guess what I see here, and that I can kind of appreciate the feeling without knowing what to do about that right, what we see there. But some of those have, I guess what I would wonder is if the changing it on the map or saying we're not going to develop here because of the sensitive lands, I don't think is a bad idea, but I'm not sure that we have anything in place to make that viable. So I feel like there is an issue here, but the issue wouldn't so much be addressed in the Transportation 2040, I guess.
And I agree, it's a sensitive area that we will keep an eye on as we move forward with both the sector plans and the comprehensive plan. Do we have any other discussion before we make a vote? All in favor of the comprehensive plan amendment to Horizon 2020 for transportation? And against? We have 9-1. We have three miscellaneous items on our agenda. But before we get to that, I was remiss in not welcoming Commissioner Carter for his first meeting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Our miscellaneous item number one is to discuss dates for our annual Planning Commissioner training. And did you want to talk about that, Scott?
Yeah, just briefly. We're looking for just some general direction on when this coming next several months that you all might want to get together. Then I think the plan is maybe get a doodle poll out. Just sometimes takes some work to get all 10 of you on a day that works, but we do really like to have all 10 members present for that orientation day. We've done it really different times of the year, just about any time of the year, so leave it to you to tell us when you're thinking you might want to hold that. The now chair and we discussed a little bit maybe that maybe September-ish, something with a little bit more daylight, to so that the chair can host the social hour and at her place. And she didn't quite let us see the whole place last time she hosted the social event. So that's one idea. So maybe that's a September. I think we did October last
year. I think it was November.
November.
Yeah.
November. So backing that up a little bit, but that kind of sets it up for you.
Okay. Thank you. So watch for a doodle poll to be coming out, and hopefully we'll get everyone to participate. It's a grand time, both the training and
the
social.
Does that September's time frame seem
September,
reasonable?
October.
Kind of after school starts? So.
Yeah. We'll shoot for that. Miscellaneous item number two, the most important of the meeting, is that after this meeting adjourns, we have to publicly announce that we will be celebrating our incoming commissioner and our outgoing commissioner, Brian Culver, at Free State Brewery after this meeting. I don't think that requires any discussion. Miscellaneous item number three is for meeting dates for the calendar, and what do you have to say?
Yeah, we would just wanted to update the commission. It doesn't affect your schedule at all, but the city manager's office is wanting to revise our internal methods of getting items to the city commission agenda. And so because they're looking for more time to get a complete packet and post it maybe a little bit earlier, there's talk about posting it earlier like we've tried to do with this commission, that has changed our calendar, which reflects both planning commission dates and probable city commission dates. It's important for us when we're talking to an applicant about what they can expect in terms of the process. And so usually we bring you each year sort of the annual calendar to bless. And this just gives you an update to let you know that we're going to spread out that time between planning commission meeting and city commission meeting in terms of getting applications up to the city commission, those that have to go. So there's just more or less receive that as information.
Thank you. Anything else?
No.
Can I borrow this?
Yes,
sir. It's yours. You are adjourned.
All right.